My name is Matthew Perot. I'm one of the second year faculty now at Loyola. I went to Loyola Medical School, just finished at Northwestern. Is the mic okay? Are you guys in the back? Okay. We're a little bit behind schedule, so I'm going to condense this like a good moving on the fly ER doc, just kind of chop out the middle part of my talk so we can stay a little bit on schedule. But I really appreciate Dr. Ward giving me the chance to talk to you guys. Initially, he said that I could have 15 minutes, which for the students who know me and the residents I've worked with will tell you is probably about 13 minutes longer than you should give me if you want things to go well. But I'm just going to talk about, I just finished my first year as an attending. I'm going to talk a little bit about the transition, things that I learned, things that surprised me, things that were helpful, and then make a little plug for the thing that I think you should be doing now as you transition. So I'm going to talk about the two most difficult parts of making the transition into being an attending. And I think a lot of you are sitting here thinking it's going to be caring for the critically ill patients, being by yourself for that like first airway, first chest tube. You know, Illinois has a nice thing going for it in that we don't really have a bad residency program in Illinois. I think they're all sort of varying shades of great, and you're all going to get good training if you're going through your program in good faith, doing everything you're supposed to be doing. That first airway is probably not going to be that bad. But the two things that were the most difficult for me about becoming an attending is, first of all, you have these cases that are incredibly challenging, and they're not the cases that you think that they're going to be. They're the cases, it's not the septic patient who needs a central line. It's not the febrile, you know, two-day-old. It's the situation where there's some administrative or legal problem that you don't really know what to do. So this is, I'll give you the most difficult case I had as a first-year attending. A guy came in for suture removal. One of my colleagues put three stitches on the bridge of his nose, okay? He came in, the lack looked beautiful. I told my colleague, like, you should be a plastic surgeon. This thing is absolutely wonderful. So I'm in the triage room. I'm going to whip his stitches out and send him on his way. The guy is beating the stuff out of his, like, three-year-old kid in front of me. So I thought, I don't really know what to do here. I kind of moved him back into the main room rather than the triage room and delayed, you know, hold on, I got to get the stuff together. I got to review your chart. But this is one of these situations where I had to make so many phone calls. I had to call social work. I had to call risk management. I called my boss. When you start a job, and I think that these people who are bosses can probably agree, like, get your boss's phone number, because you need to be able to, I'm dead serious, you need to be able to call them in a situation like that and get their help and get their advice. We ended up, this was a hugely difficult thing because the kid was not a patient. So the dad was a patient, and the dad was saying, I'm not going to stay for DCFS. I was just disciplining my kid. And the kid was not a patient. So I had a security guard outside the room saying, don't let this guy leave. The risk manager's on the phone screaming at me, saying, you cannot detain a patient. You cannot detain a person who isn't a registered patient in your emergency room. That's illegal. And I had the social worker telling me, you must detain this patient from leaving. So again, it's at times like this that you want a sort of difficult airway that you have to boost. Like that would be something that you would like kill for in that moment. And those are the things that are going to be the most surprising, I think. Those really difficult dispo. You know, the patient whose family says they're psychotic, and they say, Doc, I'm fine. You know, my mom's a jerk. She's just trying to get me in trouble. What do I do? Find out who the person in your job is who you call during those situations. It's probably your chairman or someone in your leadership structure, and have them like on your cell phone so you can reach out to that person. Okay, the second, yeah. The guy ended up leaving, DCFS like went out to their house that day, but I didn't know if I did what I thought was the right thing to do as a physician. The risk manager was like, you could be criminally charged for this. So get that person's cell phone. The other thing that was hardest, and this is something that just happens cognitively, is I had in residency, my assistant program director was Omar Aldeen, who some of you might have heard speak, and he told me this, and it's been really, really true for me in residency. Right now, you're on this path where you're moving up every year, you're headed towards graduation, you work with all these people, you're getting all this positive reinforcement. You know, great job on the airway, Gordon. You know, I just learned how to do a central line. Like, this is a new thing for me. Everything's sort of new and wonderful. And when you become an attending, there's this moment when you're just driving in for a night shift around like November, October, when you're sort of like, well, this is my life now. Like, no one's really going to be, there's no graduation. No one's going to be giving me like an award for being like, we thought you were the best trauma resident or the best teacher. Like, you go in, you get some horribly ill patient, you know, you tube them, you line them, they're on hard net ventilation strategy, you do all that stuff that Scott Weingart tells you to do. And then you call the intensivist and they're like, okay, congratulations, you did your job. And that part of that, I think, is just becoming an attending. You have to become more like internally motivated and less motivated by people like patting you on the back and telling you how wonderful you are. I hope that this doesn't make me sound like incredibly narcissistic, because I don't think that that's the issue. I think it just, I think some of the attendees are probably nodding their heads at that moment when you realize, like, this is my life. And the reason why I say that is it's a plug to figure out something. Like, personally, I'm in academics, so I, you know, teach medical students, residents, PA students. A lot of these people here are involved in administrative roles. It's a plug to just get something else in your life, something else in your professional life that'll kind of keep you going. It can be something other than just driving in for that sort of next night shift. Okay, so that was the other thing. And that wasn't like some incredibly, you know, existentially ruining, difficult thing. It's just a moment that you don't have in residency that you'll probably have as an attending. And the way to combat that is to do something in the specialty that you're passionate about, whatever that is. I want to really plug for that. Okay. My few pieces of advice, because I'm going to try to wrap up a little bit early here. I had, my chair in residency was Jim Adams at Northwestern. Jim is the master of like positive reinforcement. And you hear when you're a resident student that like, it's all about the nurses, it's all about the ancillary staff. When you're an attending, especially when you're single coverage, that is 100% true. And the way that you make this work for you, what Jim Adams would do in residency, Rocky knows this, is Jim doesn't just, at the end of a shift, Jim doesn't say good job. He says like, Colette, you did a fantastic job with that patient in room 7. Like you were right on the ball, you made all the right phone calls. He gave like really tangible, concrete, positive reinforcement. Do that with your ancillary staff when you become a new attendant. Like, yeah, buy them the pizzas, you know, get everybody coffee because they love that. You can get so much goodwill with like a cup of coffee from your ancillary staff. But be the attending that tells them when they do a good job. Because we as doctors actually kind of suck at telling people when they do a good job and really meaning it and having it be meaningful. So say, you were all over that EKG. That guy had a STEMI, you were all over it. You saved that guy's life. All I had to do was like, look at this. It says STEMI on the top, so I didn't even read it. And I didn't read it, like that was you. You're one of the reasons why that guy's alive. And I don't hold myself up as like the best example of this, because it's not like being incredibly nice and warm doesn't come naturally to me, but I had really good mentors. And following the example of my mentors has really helped me in this transition process. I had a tech come up to me the other day, pull me into a room and say, I want to thank you. Okay, what did I do? You're the only attending who, when I give them an EKG from triage, from an unsigned patient, they say thank you. And that's not, or I say thank you. And she said, I appreciate that. And that's not a behavior that I, trust me, people that have worked with me, that's not a behavior that I like came out of the womb, came into the world like knowing. It was something that I was taught by like really good instructors. Get those people on your side early. And the way you get them on your side early is not just by being nice, it's thanking them for specific things that they do. And then when the patient rolls in like covered in feces, and you're like, hey. Yeah. That's the best moment when you're a doctor. It's like, when that patient rolls in, you can like walk out of the room and tell someone else to pick it up. That's really what it's all about. Okay. So my last thing, so we can try to stay kind of on schedule here. And this is one thing that I did when I was a third and fourth year resident that I will just tell you right now, if you guys aren't doing this, then you're really selling yourself short. Who are the senior residents who are graduating this year? Okay, in a very brief period of time, you're gonna start getting paychecks that are somewhat bigger than you expect and more money than you know what to do with in some ways, unless you're already like driving a car you can't afford and then you know exactly what you're gonna do with that paycheck. But take this time and start learning about financial planning. Okay, everyone, probably nobody in this room, or very few people in this room, other than the kind of more senior attendees, feel comfortable with financial planning. Does anybody feel really comfortable with their ability to like plan their finances as an attendant? Okay, change that to where you're all like raising your hand. I'm gonna give you a plug for a blog. I don't own any stock in this. I don't know the guy personally. I've had some email communication with him. The blog is called The White Coat Investor. He's an ER doc. I think he's in South Carolina, I'm not sure. Really friendly guy. If you guys can understand sepsis resuscitation, you can understand the principles that he says. Okay, two examples. you're the fourth year medical student, talented guy, patient comes in, sepsis, respiratory failure, lactate is 10. The medical student says, you know what, I got this, I'll tube it, I'll put the line in, I'll put in an A-line, I'll do everything. Who here is gonna let that, you've never met this person, who here is gonna let that fourth year medical student do that? Anyone who raises their hand should just probably go home. Like, no one's gonna let, but that's exactly what so many doctors do with their finances. They get these paychecks, and they say, well, I'm gonna talk to a guy. Like, one of my friends knows a guy, so I'm gonna use this guy. And then you meet with this person, they give you, and if anybody here is like using a financial advisor, I'm not trying to say anything that's offensive, I'm just trying to say that I've like kind of studied this and had some good experiences learning things on my own. They're gonna give you a sort of flashy presentation. They're gonna seem like they know what they're talking about. And a lot of people, a lot of physicians just say like, okay. And basically what you're doing is you're taking these really huge paychecks that you couldn't even imagine right now, and you're turning them over to that intern who promises you that he knows how to do the central line and like safely take care of this patient. Like, you can learn this stuff. You can learn enough of it to be an advocate for your own finances, an advocate for your own retirement, and an advocate for your own assets. It's really helped me that I spent a lot of time learning so that when these paychecks come in, you're able to say, this is going here, this is going here, this is going here. It's not rocket science. We're really worried about this. We think it's so much more complicated than it is. Last point, okay. Just to illustrate how simple personal finance can be. Does anybody know what who knows what a load on a mutual fund is? Raise your hand. Do you know what a load on a mutual fund is? I'm sure some of you do. Yeah, Dr. Mystery knows what a load on a mutual fund is. Okay, Rocky, if you're gonna intubate me, Rocky is in my brother's class at Northwestern. If you're gonna intubate me, how much sucks would you use?
We do 200 milligrams
of sucks. Everybody pretty cool with 200 milligrams? Okay, so if the nurse comes up to you and says, I got one syringe here that's 200 milligrams. I've got another syringe here that I'm gonna take 6% off, right off the top, so that's what? I can't do the math. That's something less than 200 milligrams. Which one are you gonna pick? The 200 milligrams, right? Okay, that's what a load on a mutual fund is. You buy this investment vehicle. Some of them cost a lot of money to use, just like taking your drug selection and taking drug right off the top. Some of them cost almost nothing to use. Like this financial stuff, a lot of it is actually that simple, and we convince ourselves that it's incredibly difficult. And that's the one thing that I did before starting attending Hood that's not, you know, reading about cases and learning the medical care. It served me really well. I think if all of you spend a night on that blog, you'll really be glad you did. And with that, let's move on to the panel. And thank you for your attention.